Welcome to Induction Vault, a production of iHeartRadio and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Ceremony 2000.
Renegade rocker and LGBT activist Melissa Etheridge delivers a passionate induction of fellow trailblazer and blues rock icon Bonnie Raitt. Melissa illustrates Bonnie's rise from devoted student of the blues to award-winning superstar, all while outlining the personal impact that Bonnie's music had on her own life. Bonnie's humble but proud acceptance speech underscores her determination and generosity as she praises the artists that have inspired her, thanks her family and associates, and advocates for those music pioneers that haven't gotten their due.
Ladies and gentlemen, Melissa Etheridge.
Bonnie Raitt. Sex, slide, soul, selflessness. Passion, compassion, enlightenment, activism, blazing fingers, blazing hair. In the court of rock and roll, she is not the queen. She doesn't want to be the queen. She is a soldier. She is in the trenches, living it, feeling it. A woman in a man's world, breaking ground. A woman so tough, so uncompromising, so secure that she hasn't felt the need to change her hairstyle for 30 years. Yes. Woo. I was 11 the first time I saw Bonnie Raitt. She was on television and she was playing Love Has No Pride. And my father turned to me and he said, there's a woman who can play the guitar. A few years later, sitting in my room in Leavenworth, Kansas, I finally heard her again singing Runaway. I went out, I bought Sweet Forgiveness, and it wasn't long before I was playing Runaway with my band. And I was a devoted Bonnie Raitt fan. When I moved to Boston and finally found a community of strong women. It was Bonnie Raitt in the morning, Bonnie Raitt all day, Bonnie Raitt in the evening, and Bonnie Raitt all night long. She was singing, "Women, be wise, don't advertise your man." She was singing about love and pain and the blues like nobody else. She was our voice, and she spoke for us. And when I decided to pack up and move to Los Angeles, it was Bonnie's green light blaring out of my old Ford. And then, in 1986, when I was just a struggling musician trying to make my first record, I met Bonnie Raitt. Bonnie had just lost her record deal and was probably at the low point of her career. But she treated me with such dignity and respect as a fellow musician and as a woman that I never, ever forgot it. Over the years, I've sat at the Grammys and watched her win award after award, some of them in my category. I've watched her become a superstar, and I can tell you that today she is still the same honest, generous, supportive woman she has always been, the same gutsy, fearless performer. It's just that everybody else finally caught up. First, there's the musicianship. B.B. King once called Bonnie the best slide guitar player out there, bar none. When she was only 19, Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf were proud to have her on stage. She can burn up the strings with the best. Then there's that voice. That heartbreaking, soulful, sex-on-a-plate voice. The voice that's been the songwriter's best friend, that sings unforgettable versions of Randy Newman's Guilty, John Prine's Angel from Montgomery, John Hyatt's Thing Called Love. Now, Bonnie tends to downplay her own songwriting, but in 1990, the woman who wrote Give It Up, Finest Lovin' Man, and Standin' by the Same Old Love was finally recognized as the extraordinary writer she is for Nick of Time. For 30 years, Bonnie Raitt has used this powerful instrument, her talent, as a force for countless social and political causes. For a bad girl, she's done a powerful lot of good. Quakers. There goes that thing again. She was born in 1949, right? To musical parents who were Quakers, who had the good sense to give her a guitar and to teach her to care about the people and the world around her. Fueled by folk and protest songs of the 60s and later by traditional blues, she taught herself to play, spending hours alone in her room. By the time she got to Cambridge, Massachusetts, as a freshman at Radcliffe, Bonnie had already been playing guitar for 10 years and had a natural gift for bottleneck and the blues. So in 1967, when legendary blues manager Dick Waterman introduced her to the real thing, Son House and Mississippi Fred McDonald, the blues pioneers were ready and willing to share the stage with the teenage Spitfire. Those were her first road lessons, carrying strings, bottlenecks, and bottles for the pioneers of the blues. Soon, she was opening for John Hammond, Howlin' Wolf, Fred McDowell, and Sippy Wallace. Bonnie didn't just admire and learn from these legends, she made them her family, hung out with them off stage, and listened to the stories of their struggles as musicians. These stories would stay with her. By the age of 20, Bonnie was already a force to be reckoned with. When Warner Brothers offered her a record contract, she signed with one condition: complete artistic control. She was not interested in being a star. She just wanted to make good records. And Bonnie went off to do just that, making 9 solid, versatile, soulful records over the next 15 years. She introduced her cult of passionate fans to the blues and her impeccable, eclectic taste in material. For her fans, Bonnie represented a new kind of performer. Her tough body sensibility and honest sexuality proved inspiration for a whole generation of women in the 70s and 80s trying to find their place in a man's world. Bonnie could play as well as any man and still be all woman. Full of vulnerability, eroticism, anger, and compassion, Bonnie understood. During this time, although she was touring, she always made time for causes she believed in, appearing at hundreds of benefits. Activism has and continues to be an integral, vital part of who she is. Bonnie was one of the founders of Muse and a force behind the 5-day No Nukes concert at Madison Square Garden in 1979. Educating a whole generation about the dangers of nuclear energy and funding grassroots anti-nuclear groups. In addition to her lifelong commitment to No Nukes, Bonnie has been active in Planned Parenthood, Native American issues, and scholarships, the preservation of the Redwoods, Doctors Without Borders, Farm Aid, and a variety of other organizations and political causes. But Bonnie's not the kind that just writes the check. She's out there protesting injustice in person. As Ruth Brown once said, the girl will go to jail for anybody. She has also consistently donated tickets to her concerts to community and nonprofit organizations. Bonnie's heart and commitment remained, even when, in the mid-80s, she was dropped by her record label. A weaker performer might have buckled, but Bonnie kept playing true to the music. She used the time to come to terms with herself and to write. When Capitol gave her a chance at another record in 1989, Bonnie delivered a little album called Nick of Time. And in 1990, the world caught on to what Bonnie's fellow musicians and fans had known for 20 years. Bonnie was a phenomenon. It wasn't that she sold out. No, no. Nick of Time, a song from her soul about a mature woman's deepest secret fears, was hardly the stuff of pop songs. But go figure, it was Song of the Year and became an anthem for women everywhere. Those lines are pretty hard to take when they're staring back at you. That's about as honest as it gets. That year's 4 Grammys and the 5 since have given Bonnie a bigger audience for the music she's always loved and a bigger canvas to do good. It allowed her to take Ruth Brown and Charles Brown on tour with her. It allowed her to pay her band better, and in the last few years, it allowed her to make major contributions to both rock and roll's past and its future. As a founding trustee of the Rhythm and Blues Foundation, Bonnie has fought tirelessly for royalty reform, fought for financial assistance, health insurance, and recognition for the pioneers of rhythm and blues. She worked with, yes. She's worked with the Smithsonian Institute to establish a national rhythm and blues archive and offers performance funds and grants. With Bonnie and the trustees' tireless efforts, the foundation has awarded over $2 million to musicians in need. In 1999, Bonnie's commitment to the foundation was honored with the B.B. King Hero Award. Her concern for these musicians is passionate and personal. She knows what she owes them and what we all owe them. But Bonnie's also keeping her eye on the future. No woman had ever had a signature guitar series when Fender approached Bonnie Raitt. She was the first. But Bonnie wasn't interested in putting her name on a product unless the profits could do some good. In 1996, she and Fender teamed with the Boys and Girls Club of America for the Bonnie Raitt Guitar Project, making guitars and lessons available for underprivileged kids, especially girls, and donating all the money from the sales of the Bonnie Raitt signature Stratocaster to this project. Now, kids who are powerless in so many ways can have the power of music, the power of access, the power of accomplishment. There are already over 150 of these programs across the country, reaching more than 4,000 students, most of them girls, and the project is growing. Bonnie is no distant role model for these kids. She invites them to her concerts, visits the centers, and brings them backstage, and she's even been known to give the guitar off her back to some of these girls. As always, Bonnie puts her money where her mouth is, and as her friends and longtime associates will tell you, she has some mouth. After 30 years in the business, Bonnie Raitt has recorded 15 records and contributed to over 150 others. As a session player, she has always served the spirit of the record and the performer with generosity, professionalism, and without ego. And damn it, Bonnie, I'm gonna lock you in the studio and you're gonna play on one of my records, okay? She's won 9 Grammy Awards, performed at over 200 benefits, and she's made sure her friends and mentors, the pioneers of rhythm and blues, will be remembered and valued. Tonight, Bonnie Raitt joins some of those friends, both living and dead. Friends who always recognized her for what she is, a musical pioneer in her own right, a force for good and a force of nature. Now it is my honor and privilege to induct Bonnie Raitt into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
After the break, hear Bonnie Raitt's fired up speech on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault.
Thank you very much. I don't know about you, but that wore me out. I was flopping like a fish over there. It was going on. I didn't realize I lived so long. Sorry for all those ups and downs, but it's only 2 labels, really. I'm flabbergasted. I don't know what to say. I've been up here before, and I'll try to make it brief. It's a great honor to be standing here tonight, and I don't know if any of us ever get up here expecting to reach this level of respectability when we're first bopping around our rooms as kids to our favorite records. Expected to make a living at it, let alone take a place next to all these legends I've watched walk up these stairs. I'd like to thank you so much for holding me in such high esteem and for that beautiful tribute, Melissa. for being the one to induct me and carrying the torch. I'm especially proud to be here tonight because of what it says about what you think is important. I'm proud because it's partly because I don't just put on an electric guitar, but because I know how to ride it. Let's hope this marks the beginning of lots more women getting out of the kitchen and into the kick-ass fire. And there's two electric guitar playing women up here tonight. I just want to say this is a beginning. I'm also proud that this probably has as much to do with who I am as how many records I've sold. I'm a little embarrassed by that lengthy recollection of what it is that I'm doing to be Mother Teresa up here, so I don't feel like saying anything other than I appreciate being acknowledged for standing up for what moves me, whether it's the music I love or somebody getting a raw deal. To me, they both call for the same amount of passion and tending. And because I grew up as part of this uniquely transitional generation of women, my ferocious need to not be held down, mistreated, or controlled has often run me headbutting into that lingering male-female paradigm best described by our reigning pastor of funk, Reverend James Brown. This is still, in many ways, a man's world, but certainly not for long. Singing from the big wound has assured me. Singing from the big wound has assured me and a long line of blues singers an avid and loyal following. But where that vulnerability butts up against wanting to level the playing field lies the price of every song and every love affair I've ever lived. I also know I'm here tonight because someone bigger than me has pulled me off that pyre time and time again. I'm thankful that for that always amazing grace. For me, tonight is about honoring as much as being honored. I'd like to deeply acknowledge the debt I owe to the brilliance and often sacrifice of the great rock and roll, jazz, blues, country, and rhythm and blues pioneers who put us all in this room in the first place. I'm proud to be here tonight because I know how important it is for us to not only recognize their rightful place in our culture's history, but to make certain they get what's coming to them in the way of proper royalties and medical care. I'm proud to be a bridge between blues and rock, but it won't be standing on the backs of those who didn't get their due. We have a great opportunity to right a historical wrong, so let's just do it. If you sell the records, pay them what they deserve. If we're lucky enough to have made some money, let's give some up to the ones who weren't. Thank you very much for that. I'm trying to wrap this up here. But I have some people that mean a lot to me tonight that someone asked me earlier today what was the greatest thrill about being here, and I think it is being able to finally thank these people properly. I'd like to give my personal thanks, first of all, to my parents, my dad, John, who's sitting out there tonight, and my mom out in California. They not only passed on their gift for music, but steered me into a world where being of service matters. Your brilliance, love, and non-judgmental support has everything to do with why I'm up here. And thanks to my very cool brothers, Steve and David, too. To Joan Baez, Pete Seeger, and Bob Dylan for teaching me to sing for what's right. To the Beatles, the Stones, the artists of Motown, Stax Vold, Atlantic, Chess Checker, John Hammond Jr., Aretha, Ray Charles, Mississippi Fred McDowell, the Staple Singers, Chris Smither, Joni Mitchell, Muddy Wolf, John Lee, Sippy, Taj, Ry Cooter, Little Feet, and of course the Brown family dynasty, Ruth, Charles, James, and Jackson. I thank you for the role they've played in supporting my career. I want to thank the following people who are here tonight. First, the man who gave me my start opening up for the legendary blues artist he managed, then went on to book and manage me for the first 15 years, Dick Waterman. I thank you. You deserve it. To my lawyer, Nat Weiss, who got a 21-year-old total artistic control at Warner Brothers Records twice, I thank you for pulling me out of those 80s career rapids and into the foamy headwaters in the nick of time, Ron Stone and Danny Goldberg. For the view from the top floor these last 10 years, I'd like to thank all my friends at Capitol Records for believing in me twice, Joe Smith. Thanks to Hale Milgram, David Berman, Tim Devine, Tom Wally, Gary Gersh, Jim Fifield, Roy Lott, Judy Kerr, and so many other loyal and dear friends. I couldn't have gotten up here without you, and I mean it. And to all you Warner Brothers alumni, I'll never forget you either. And hey, now that my catalog's all under one roof, how about that box set, baby? I got a box set for you right now. For the last 15 years of great gigs, I'd like to thank Paul Goldman and everyone at Monterey Peninsula Artists for road managing me during the extremely ripe first 20 years and for keeping the wheels greased. Thank you, Tim Burnett. For coordinating over 25 years of benefit receptions, concerts, and rallies, I'd like to thank Tom Campbell and his amazing staff at Avocado for helping us spread it around like we're supposed to. To Don Wise, Ed Cherney, Mitchell Froom, Chad Blake, and all the other producers, engineers, musicians, and songwriters who helped make those 14 albums something I'm so proud of, thank you. And for helping me keep my audience coming back for more and for not writing a book, I'd like to thank the members of my wonderful bands and crews. Without your undeniable funk and sense of humor, I know I wouldn't be up here. And lastly, to the people closest to me who daily put the fires under people and out, have the Herculean task of coordinating this incredible life I get to have, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Without you, I'd have no security, ease, or effect on the world. For 28 years of navigating the minefields with class, expertise, and humor, my personal business manager, Jeffrey Hirsch, I love you. And for the last 7 years with your hand on the big tiller, I'd like to thank you, Ron Stone, for your continued enthusiasm and devotion, which is matched only by your unquenchable gall. You are the reason I can admire professional wrestling. I love you too. And for my personal Xena, Kathy Kane, who absolutely runs everything about the ship of whatever state I'm in, and her assistant, Melissa Fenton, who helps us both. I literally couldn't do this without you. There are no words to thank you enough. And finally, you can call it rock and roll. Ray Charles can call it whatever the hell he wants. Blues or R&B, to me it's all the same. Nobody gets up here who wasn't obsessed, didn't worry their parents, didn't mess up their relationships, and if they did it right, probably their health as well. It's the thing that still drives me most, and it always will. I'm never gonna get enough. So to my friends and fans for sticking with me and everybody out there who brought me here tonight, I really thank you for this great honor. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this long presentation.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault. For more on your favorite inductees, to shop inductee merch, or to plan your trip to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, visit rockhall.com. Plus, view the 2020 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Special on demand on HBO Max. Our executive producers are Noel Brown, Shelby Morrison, and Risa Gerke. Supervising producer is Taylor Shacoin. Research and archival assistance from Isabel Kiefer and Shannon Erb. Thanks again for joining us on this week's episode of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault. Induction Vault is a production of iHeartRadio and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.